Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Phase Zero's Road to Deadpool and Wolverine rolls on with this bonus episode, X-Men First Class Recap and Review. I'm BD, joined today by Jamie Jurak.
Good morning, everyone.
Jenna Anderson.
Hey, everybody. I am so excited for this episode. Let's do it.
And Aaron Perrine.
What's going on, BD? Oh, boy. One of these I'm really, really excited to talk about. Imagine that.
X-Men First Class, excellent film. Now, I got to let y'all in on a couple secrets in one statement here. You will never get more messages on social media than when you open up a box of Taylor Swift Disney Plus swag.
Yeah.
Or admit that you had never seen X-Men First Class all the way through until this weekend. It's a secret I have kept to myself. I've been saying there is one movie in the X franchise that I just never sat down and watched all the way through, and it was this one. I don't know why y'all never told me about this movie. Nobody ever told me first.
We told you. You just didn't listen.
BD. As I said in my comment. BD. BD, I don't want to give away future episodes, but knowing what your favorite X-Men movie is, I just can't believe you haven't seen this. Like, I'm so shocked. But I'm also happy for you. Like, I'm not judging you. I'm just surprised.
I'm
happy I got to have this this experience in the midst of no X-Men movies. Basically, I feel like I just got a new one for myself. This movie is, well, we'll share the reactions momentarily. Here's a breakdown of how the show goes. If you're new to our Road to Deadpool and Wolverine road here, you're riding shotgun with us. We start the show with Jamie's recap. We give our reactions as if the social media embargo just lifted. However, this movie is like over a decade old, so that means spoilers are fair game from this point forward. Then we take a quick break. We take a deep dive into X-Men First Class. Then one more break, and then we give you our out of 10 review score in 2024. And that's the moment you're all be waiting for. We give it an official Phase Zero ranking number. So without further ado, Jamie, if you would do us the honors and remind us all, what was X-Men First Class about?
I'd love to. I want you to know getting under 5 minutes for this one's going to be a challenge. But I don't want to compromise my artistic integrity, but I'm going to do my best for all of you. All right.
You got this.
So we start in Poland in the 40s, the same way the first X-Men starts. Eric's a kid again. He's back in the concentration camp, but now he catches the eye of one Sebastian Stah, one mean old Nazi. And he's like, move a coin. And he's like, I can't do it. So you know what he does? He kills his mother. And then he goes crazy with metal everywhere. And that is his origin. Meanwhile, young Charles has it a lot easier over in his mansion. And little Mystique, aka Raven, is breaking in. And little Charles is like, you'll never have to steal food again. And that is all of their childhoods. And then cut two, we've got now they're a little older. They're in the 60s. They're groovy, baby. We've got Charles is trying to become a professor. He's working on his thesis. Raven's a waitress. She doesn't like being blue. She wants to look like Jennifer Lawrence. Meanwhile, Eric, he is on a rampage of revenge. He's killing Nazis. It's pretty freaking awesome. It's also pretty sexy. We love to see it. And then, but what's going on? Everyone's doing their own thing. But then who's this? Moira McTaggart. She's working for the CIA. She's infiltrating something called the Hellfire Club. And she's in her little teeny tiny undercover outfit. She's going around. And what does she see? Mutants? What are these people? What are these powers? Colonel Hendricks just disappeared in front of her eyes. But people don't believe her. And she says, I must find someone who knows about genetic mutations. And that is how he meets Charles. And he reads her mind. And he knows that she knows about mutants. And they decide to work together. And she takes him to the CIA. And he's like, I know about the missiles in Cuba. And they're like, you're a spy. And then they're like, no, we're not. We're mutants. And then they prove it. And then Oliver Platt is there. And he's like, best magic trick I've ever seen. I'm going to take you to my facility. And then they go to a facility. And they're like, this is so cool. Look, we've got this thing Cerebro. Oh, this guy's name is Hank McCoy. He's been working on some business. And he's like, you're a mutant too? Oh no, I outed you. I'm so sorry. But look at your cool big feet. And then they're like, let's start recruiting. And then they recruit people. They get Banshee. They get Angel. They get Havoc. They get Darwin. Ooh, did I forget anybody? I don't know. We'll figure it out later. That's the team, baby. We've started the first team. But remember that guy, Sebastian Stah? He's got a power to get energy and then explode that energy. He's a big deal. And he's like, I've got my own sinister plans. I want to do my own things. And he's doing his own things. And then he comes back and he's like, I want to recruit some of you because mutants are cool and I love you all, but I want to take over the world. And they're like, no. And they get into a fight and it's bad because our boy Darwin died. R.I.P. It should have been you, man. And so it's all coming down. Things are terrible. It's really sad. Meanwhile, they're like, we can do this. We're going to hone in our powers. And then Charles is like, I'm going to take you back to my mansion. My mansion is now your mansion. And everybody trains. Turns out it was only a week of training, but it was very successful. Beast is running. They don't have their names quite yet, but Hank is running. Banshee is flying. Eric is in touch with his feelings. It's all going so well. But they've got to stop this Cuban Missile Crisis situation. And they're going, and everything's going really well. But here's the problem. Eric still wants his revenge on Sebastian Stah for killing his mother. Who wouldn't? You know what I'm saying? And so they're all coming down. A big war is going to happen. Can the newfound X-Men save the world? There's a fight. There's a battle. But the problem is Eric just can't not put a coin through Sebastian Stah's head. He murders him. And then he takes his helmet. And now he says, I'm sorry, Charles, but we just will never agree on what the world needs. And now you can't infiltrate my mind. And now there's a fight between friends. Magneto's trying to kill all the humans that they just saved. Moira shoots at him. He pushes the bullet. Oh no, it goes into Charles's back. We know what that means. Our boy has been paralyzed, but they still save the day because Eric feels bad. He hurt his friend and it's really sad because they love each other. If there's nothing else going on, we know that these two men love each other, but he says it's time to go. And so some of the guys go with him, including Raven, because she has finally learned to love herself and love her blue form. And she says, I'm sorry, Charles. I love you, but I must go with him. And he's like, that's okay. And it's a little bit sad, but that's all right. They're all going their separate ways. And we'll see how will things end between them. I bet there'll be another movie to tell us what happens in the next decade. I think that's it.
Snaps. That was pretty.
That under was, 5 minutes. Wow.
4:30.
Wow, I'm honestly surprised. I'm really surprised. I thought
with
I was worried about that.
Solid inclusion of details there, too. Good work.
Thank you.
Good work.
Thank
so that's X-Men First Class, the Jamie Jurak cut. if somebody has the time, and I do, I'm so sorry in advance to whichever of our Phasio community listeners is out there. If one of you has so much free time, feel free to cut over the movie over Jamie's recap. And one day, so I bet somebody might actually do that. Like just only wow. your audio with the relevant clips to what you're describing, just playing. Oh, that'd be awesome. But we can't pay you for it. It's not an obligation. But anyway, okay. Reaction time. Aaron, you're at the top of the screen. What did you think of X-Men First Class?
Man, rewatching this, because I don't, you know, I'm probably the only person on this panel that doesn't rewatch movies a ton. It is pretty exhilarating to watch someone who's such a curator of vibes, as that's really what Vod is good at, just absolutely do that, nail it down. If you're a person who's been thinking that Fantastic Four period piece thing might not work, I submit to you this, because it looks really good and feels really good, and it like works the way it's supposed to. There's still all like the good fan catnip in there, but it also kind of makes you, I think the funny thing about these movies, watching the X-Men animated series, all this stuff, is that the characters are so drawn so well that you just, they feel comfortable. Even if it's different actors playing them, they still feels really, really comfortable. I will say the most hilarious part of the entire movie is definitely booting it up and seeing the one-to-one recreation of X-Men 1, because we definitely were like, did we press the wrong button on Disney Plus? Is this the first movie? No, it's not. It's just you haven't seen it in 8 million years. So, big fan. It's great.
Jenna, what about you?
This was the movie that I was the most terrified to rewatch for this entire process, because I have such a fondness for this movie and I have such a fondness for the fandom around this movie. Being on Tumblr at the era in which this movie was released was unparalleled. It was one of the greatest experiences I've ever had on Tumblr. So I was so curious, this many years removed, I have not rewatched it in a long while. I was curious how it was going to hold up and if it was going to still deliver. And oh my God, it did. It still is so much fun to watch. It, to Aaron's point about the period piece, the X-Men succeed and so are so intrinsically tied to the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And this movie gets that in such a beautiful and such a fun way. As somebody who has my gripes with Matthew Vaughn in other cinematic contexts, everything he does in this movie works for me. It is not a perfect movie, but it is so much fun that it honestly is probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, Jamie, I'm going to let you keep catching your breath and share my thoughts here. I also think it's fantastic. I think this is like, it really is Kingsman, but with X-Men, which this came first. See, it's got Matthew Vaughn's, you know, style, that ensemble relationship, dynamic flavor to it that he does so well. It also gets X-Men characters right again, going back to X1 and X2, something X3 kind of pushed to the side. And we talked about that previously, how the characters were just kind of props that and names that weren't really honoring their comic book counterparts. And this immediately, whether it's recast characters into younger versions of themselves or newly introduced characters, they really do a good job of bringing X-Men characters to life for Marvel Comics and establishing interesting relationships, like the scene with them all just messing around with their powers and stuff. But I think all of you, but there was one of you who specifically, I think it might have been Jamie, was saying about this, that Marvel needs more of this in the MCU, just characters sitting around doing stuff, getting to know each other. Like, that's what that scene was. It's the characters, we get to see their powers, we get to see them be people, we get to understand them and fall in love with them because they're just kind of becoming relatable in that moment. But yeah, Vaughn does a fantastic job. It also, that opening scene being a recreation, I thought that was awesome. I was like, wait a second, I swear I've seen this before, but I know I've seen parts of this movie, maybe even most of it, but never all in one sitting. But didn't I just see this? And they actually reshot the opening sequence from X-Men. I love that it does not shy away from being a little heavy at times, which is, like we've talked about, part of the Magneto story and the Eric story. And it's just a good... Also, Professor X was a dog in this movie. Professor X was out here shooting like Steph Curry, but he wasn't making as many shots. Goodness gracious.
It's pretty comic accurate, I gotta say, especially with Lilandra and a bunch of other characters in the comics. Like, that is not unprecedented for Charles to act that way.
Charles Xavier, you dog, you. Hey man, shooter shoot, I guess. Jamie, What did you think of X-Men First Class?
I'm in the minority in the fact that, thanks to Letterboxd, I can tell you this is my fourth time watching this movie in the last 3 years. I love this movie very much. I remember going to see it in theaters and being like, all right, I was ready to get hurt again because I'd been hurt so for the last, you know, however many years. And when that opening started and when it opened the same way as the first movie, I'll never forget being like, oh my God, they're doing this. Because I was like, a new cast. I don't know how I feel about that. And the fact that it was instantly tied in, I was so hooked. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think I put as an X-Men movie, it has its flaws that I know we will talk about. I realize I forgot to even mention Emma Frost in my recap, which tells you something right there. But aside from that, I just, as a movie, I love this movie. Like you said, Brandon, the way that they all, you know, you get to know each other and all that stuff, it just works for me so well. And I love the 60s of it. I love that they even use like the 60s transitions and they really go in it. I think Matthew Vaughn did an amazing job. My biggest gripe with this movie, I think, is so funny, is how much Raven doesn't want to be blue and how she's like, I hate the way I look. I'm walking around like Jennifer Lawrence, but I just want to look normal. But that's what your power does. It doesn't make sense to me that she's like, hey, like, spends so much of this movie hating her appearance when she, and like trying to change that without changing her abilities, when that's already what her abilities do. But aside from like that, just has never clicked with me. But the cast, oh my God, Michael Fassbender, when he freaking stabs that Nazi, swigs back his beer and slides his fingers through his hair. That is the sexiest moment in any comic book movie. Maybe So yeah, I love this movie very much.
It's a good movie. If only they had kept Valkyrie licking the knife, then there would have been some competition. There's only room for one hot knife scene in the Marvel universe, apparently. Fun fact: the movie cost $160 million to make. It made $353 million worldwide. I kind of forget how these movies performed. In my head, there's a couple things I've gaslit myself on, being a decade removed from a lot of these X-Men movies. First of all, I thought they made more money. But second of all, I didn't realize how soon into the franchise they started this reboot process, this sort of reboot prequel process. This is only the fifth movie. There's only been three X-Men movies with that OG cast. Then you had Wolverine Origins. And I really just, for some reason, thought there was more with that original. And there is. Like, I know there's more coming. But I just didn't realize how early into this franchise, it's only the fifth film, that they were already ready to kind of hit that reset button. And I obviously knew that, but just, I don't know, I guess I didn't really have the perspective in watching them in this quick succession ever before. I was like, oh, wow, the fourth ensemble movie is where they already started to go back and do it again. But I found that interesting. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. Great opportunity for over 600 people watching live on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. And I think we're on Facebook, too. I don't know. We're on a whole bunch everywhere. Comicbook.com has channels. But Phase Zero is the YouTube channel we really want to grow. We have interviews about X-Men 97 on there. Aaron just wrapped one earlier today that you guys can look out for. If you're on podcast platforms, thank you for the 5-star reviews in advance. We love you for it. Subscribe everywhere. We'll see you in a moment to take a deep dive into X-Men First Class.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Phase Zero's X-Men First Class. Decade later review on the road to Deadpool and Wolverine. This is the deep dive section of the recap and review. Let's start at the beginning. Movie starts with that recreation of the X-Men 1 scene, which we agreed when doing that review a few weeks ago. Set the tone for the X saga, showed how seriously these movies are taking themselves, how serious the audience should take, how the emotional weight is there, the grittiness. I thought that was really cool, and it is a reshoot, a recreation, a shot-for-shot remake of that, which, if you know, unless you have them side-by-side and have watched them in direct succession, you're like, wait a second, is this a replay? It's a remake. What did you guys take away from that, the movie starting that way?
Like we said at the first segment of the show, I think starting on that note and having it be a shot for shot recreation, like, showed how much intent this movie had and how much they were going for. I feel like if a superhero movie was going to do a sequence like this today, they would just recut the old footage and add something to it and not actually go back and reshoot it. So like that kind of showed like, oh, they are putting a lot of work into this, and it already shows right out of the gate.
If it wasn't for the fact that the young actor then continued to have more scenes I would have thought it was the same exact scene. Like it is very impressive. And I really like your point, Jenna, that like they would have been lazy today is absolutely what it would have come down to. And that kind of makes me sad to think about.
Like, sometimes it works. Like, in Fast X, it works for me. When they just, cut to the side and just show characters who were supposedly in scenes from, like, five movies ago. But, like, with this, just not reusing the footage was definitely a good call.
Spider-Man, was it Spider-Man Far From Home? With Obadiah Stane and the scientist at the arc reactor?
Yeah.
When all the Stark Industries employees were turning bad and they kept showing montages? A lot of that was mostly reused, and I think they may have added a couple little things.
Yeah, that's fun, though. Like, I think that's really fun. I think it is a scene like this that's starting the movie and is very emotionally heavy. Mm-hmm. I think to recreate it is the best bet. But you guys are laying down some really good examples of when it works.
So that then cuts over to Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special star Kevin Bacon being introduced as Sebastian Shaw, a largely comics accurate version of Sebastian Shaw in terms of mutant abilities and stuff, the ability to absorb energy, leader of the Hellfire Club. Hellfire Club a little different in the movie, but there's a deleted scene where they have a banner that's kind of similar to the Hellfire Club banner in comics, but doesn't make the movie. But that opening scene before they kill young Eric's mom and all that, the most harrowing moment that I felt in that scene was when Vaughn flips the camera and you see the reveal of the lab, the torture lab with all the knives and all that terrible stuff over there. And you just know what has happened and what will continue to happen in that room, if not destroyed by Eric later in the scene, probably fixed up and used again terribly later anyway. But that was such a harrowing moment. I thought that was a genius director choice.
I agree.
No better way to make him look unhinged.
Seriously.
And he's already a Nazi. Like, there's not.
Yeah. I mean, how much more can we do?
And it also then just draws the contrast between Eric's life and Charles's life. Because when we see Eric going through these things, you got Professor X growing up, and then he grows up to be that little playboy I just mentioned. at the top of the show. Man, that dude uses the same line on different women. It must have worked somewhere. But, you know, if you look like James McAvoy and you have that accent, I bet that line would work anyway.
It would work on me, baby. I'll tell you that right now.
You know, I loved that version of Professor X. Watching him was so much fun. I think it's fun to see him just being in the club. But then Raven's like, no. You're not hitting on this girl with eyes like Stryker's son. Not having it. what else we got here? Moira McTaggart was introduced. She's the first big, recast that sort of disregards a previous appearance, right? Although Matthew Vaughn told everybody, don't worry about the accents for this.
Clearly.
But she doesn't worry about the accent.
I didn't mind that. Like, in the context of the movie, her not having the very thick Irish accent makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. as comic accurate as it is, as comic readers know, especially in recent years, Moira has taken on a lot of different forms over the years and has had a lot of different personalities. I'll leave it at that because BD has not read certain comics we were talking about before the show. So I don't mind that she doesn't have that accent.
Yeah, I don't care at all.
I would have liked to hear what Rose Byrne's attempt at it is, because she's already doing an accent because she's Australian. So, like, she's already doing something. So I'd be curious if she can do one, because she can do an American accent, but I also don't care.
I'm Moira McTaggart. Oh, my God. The day after St. Patrick's Day. I'm sorry.
How dare you?
I was about to say.
I'm sorry. Here, let me. Oh, God.
Guys. One of my friends rewatched Austin Powers over the week, and that's all I could think about when they're in that club, like as they're all like cycling in. I'm just like, oh no, machine guns, dear God, you're gonna die, you're in danger.
They're always after me, Lucky Charms.
Where is Colonel Hendricks?
Okay, you started an Austin Powers. Yeah, look, I made the background green to make, you know, but. Yeah, don't start me on Austin Powers quotes, because then we don't have enough time for all that. Hellfire Club members Shaw, Emma Frost, Azazel, and Riptide. Go ahead. Talk about Emma Frost.
Jamie, go first, since you omitted her from your recap. I will say, as a huge Emma Frost fan, especially in the time since this movie came out, there have been some cycles of internet discourse that have been like, oh, this movie did her dirty. They didn't dress her up well enough compared to how she's dressed up well. I think it's fine. I like her outfits in this movie. I do think, like, for the era in which they're in, they do a pretty good job. I think that this is really great casting. I just think the movie doesn't do nearly enough with her for my liking, but it still is markedly better than what's in X-Men Origins, and it still is pretty good for the time.
I also don't mind the costume at all. I don't see a problem with the way that she looks. I don't know if it's the casting that doesn't work. I at the time when this movie came out wasn't really super familiar with her. But my friend Brett is like the number one Emma Frost stand in the universe. Like I've never met anyone who loves Emma Frost the way this man loved Emma Frost. And the way he talks about it is just like offensive. Like, it's offensive to him the way that the character is portrayed. And the more I watch it, because I have since read comics with, you know, and I do wish she had there's just like a power to her, not the literal power, but like kind of a seductive power in a way. Maybe that's the wrong word, but
swagger.
Swagger is a much better word. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. That just isn't captured here. But it's also, I wouldn't go as far as to call it offensive, like my boy Brett would. But I also do. I do agree with you that I think the costume is fine.
Those, the HD lace fronts and the units they got on this woman are delightful in this thing. I'm like, oh, look, wow, that's a really good wig. That's a really good unit. But the costuming, I think we're also putting our modern sensibilities of Emma onto a thing that was made by also Matthew Vaughn. Like, you're not going to get this couture version of her from what year was this? I don't even remember what year it was, but I don't
2011.
Think that, no.
I mean, if you Google Emma Frost and you click the images tab, the costumes are not inconsistent with what is in this movie in comics. And I know now we have leaned away from the more gratuitous costumes for people, But back then, then 13 years ago, wasn't, you know, that's, and also in comics now, a lot of characters still are just kind of, you know, the character was kind of just a prop though, in a lot of ways. Like she would, the sequence where they're in that back room and you have January Jones just sitting there, like basically in like a white bra. I was like, this feels kind of weird to just like, I don't know, watching it today. I'm like, my brain has been trained away from this, even though like that, whatever. I mean, I don't have a problem with the costume at all, but yeah, it just felt kind of weird. But
I will say, like, we'll talk about this more when we get to Days of Future Past. I do mourn the sequel we could have gotten to this that would have just like linearly continued the stories from this. Cause I would have loved to have seen her with Eric and like that whole kind of Brotherhood of Mutants thing, because I feel like that would have had even more potential for her to be even more comic accurate. Mm.
The shoulder pads we missed out on.
Yeah.
And she's also one of the, just like Moira McTaggart, a step away from the kind of continuity that Deadpool makes fun of in the first movie. But not Emma Frost specifically, but these timelines and all that stuff being confusing because...
But kind of Emma Frost specifically, like, because she's in Origins.
Right. Yeah. And is much, well, I don't know the age, like about the same age, but obviously, what, 40 years later?
Yeah.
In Origins. So this is definitely a step, like the Moira McTaggart one doesn't really matter, but the Emma Frost one, you're like, wait a second, wasn't she just like a point and she had the same power for a moment in Origins? But whatever, these timelines are so confusing. Simon Kinberg wanted to make Azazel Mystique's dad, but didn't end up getting that into the movie, so that's a thing that almost happened.
That would have been weird, especially now, given the family tree that they are both a part of in the comics. Because, like, for a time, they were both Nightcrawler's parents, and that has since been retconned to not be a thing, like, very, very recently. So that would have made it even weirder. That would have been, like, how Red Guardian and Natasha are in the comics versus in the MCU. If, like, here's a completely different relationship dynamic from the source material at all.
Yeah. And that brings me to the bar scene with Michael Fassbender's Eric and a couple of Nazis getting wrecked. Yeah, they're playing chess. They're playing checkers. He's playing chess. Literally, those guys are playing checkers at the table. And he is playing chess all the time. And man, that scene was fun. When he stabbed the hand the second time, it's good stuff.
I know we've been talking about this a lot in terms of how to tackle Eric in future projects, and I keep going back and forth on it because logistically it might not make sense just with the way that time works, but then I see a scene like this and I'm like, oh, it's just, I already gushed about it, I don't really need to do it again, but like it's my favorite scene in the movie. So like I just that kind of powerful background. I saw somebody make a suggestion of an alternate thing he could be in the future, and I'm not even going to dignify it with saying it on this podcast, but I'm like, we can do better. Like we can do better things. So oh god,
tell me off camera, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about, and yeah,
I'll tell you all after.
Oh no, wait, hold on. Can I just say, no man on screen in anything has worn linen pants and stood on more business than Michael Fassbender and Robert Redford in The Great Gatsby from back in the day. I was like, he's about to deal with you and like fan himself with a straw hat. This is very, very, very real. Like, I was like, oh no, they're all in such danger. And he was like housing a beer while he was doing it too. Just delightful.
Mm. Yeah.
About to get worked by a man who could just go into a business meeting, no sweat, and put your money in a Swiss bank account after this if he needs to.
That's right.
Just looking sharp.
Oh,
man. Yeah. I remember a few weeks ago, I was like, man, good luck to whoever has to follow Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen. And when I said that, I just didn't even think about the fact that obviously James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender already did. Good luck to anybody who has to follow both of those acts, both of those characters. And I've seen the rest of this. Is the only one that I hadn't watched all the way through. And I already knew, obviously, those guys played. I've asked James McAvoy about Professor X. I just forgot it at the moment. All right. We saw Charles use that same ability to freeze everybody that we saw in the very first X-Men movie, where the, like, it looks like time is frozen, but really just the people are. And then one of like the CIA agents is taking the little water fountain to the face the whole time the water's moving. So that shows that time is still going. Charles, when they're walking in with Oliver Platt's character, says, we are to be the CIA's New Mutant Division. He said the thing. So New Mutant reference right there. The team is Darwin, Angel, Banshee. Is there, who am I forgetting?
Havoc.
Alex Summers, the son of, or the brother of Scott.
Yes.
But not apparently, really.
Not like, yet.
That would be some Cody Rhodes age gaps, according to The Rock.
That's a whole conversation as we continue these movies. The decades thing is fun, but it starts to really lose sensibility, and it doesn't make sense. So, but it's fun to look at.
To be explored at Deadpool and Wolverine this summer.
Exactly.
Man, I didn't even realize Zoe Kravitz was in this movie.
Uh-huh. Oh, you had no idea.
And I was like, wait a second. Is that her? And it is her. In fact, doing all of her toxic spewing thing as Angel 2, which was comics accurate too. When you have a mutant ability like that, you tend to lean Magneto. No? True or false?
Maybe. I think that you're putting fire powers in a box, Brandon. And I don't think that's
true. True or false? Let's look at the rosters here. If part of your mutant ability is spewing stomach acid, you tend to lean Magneto. I'm just saying. Look at the teams. But I get it. That kind of speaks for itself, right? Because the people on Magneto's side feel pressure. Like, I'm joking about the power because it's kind of a gross power. But those people who would be made to feel like their ability is gross would be like, well, I want to be myself. I want to be the world made me feel bad about it. Look at Mystique. Those are the people. Look at Toad and all these other people who end up on Magneto's team. Wolverine cameo, dropped the first F word in the X saga.
Perfect. Great stuff.
The original line was F off. Apparently he improvised and said the line he said, and that's the one they used in the movie.
Iconic.
Beautiful scene.
The cameos like that are just, it's so good.
I can't imagine how cool that felt in the theater at the time, too. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine, like, the insane huge pop that must have gotten in front of a live audience.
Hear that? Big pop.
Pop.
Pop, pop.
I wish I would have seen this movie in theaters. I didn't. I'm a fraud. I'm retiring. I'm resigning. Showdown on the beach is next. Pretty much, basically, they have their teams. Charles does, well, honestly, Charles trains everybody, which really just sets the stage for him becoming Professor X. Like, he doesn't have the School for Gifted Youngsters yet, but in his way of training Banshee, of training Havoc, of training Angel, of training Eric also, I thought that scene with the satellite was great, where he has these memories that he unlocks that were kind of suppressed trauma memories that he ends up using to turn an entire satellite. I thought that was great stuff, and it just shows Charles' ability to connect with these people, make them believe in themselves. To learn how to control their mutant abilities and use it for the better, which is what that guy is all about ultimately in the end. And I think Matthew Vaughn understood the assignment in delivering these characters and their story there.
It's also just fun seeing both of them grow as characters, because like that whole scene and that whole exchange, having them not completely be at square one, but not fully be formed the way that they were when they were introduced in the original trilogy of movies is like so refreshing. And even especially now, that felt especially refreshing.
Mm-hmm. One thing I skipped over was Azazel dropping all the CIA guys out of the sky.
Jesus.
My boy, Oliver Platt. It makes me so sad when he drops Oliver Platt, because I love Oliver Platt and I love his character in this movie. And every time I watch it, I'm like, maybe this is the time Oliver Platt won't get dropped.
I was watching that like, wait a second, they're going to save him, right? Like, he's not going to. We didn't see him drop. If we didn't see a body, he's still good. Maybe he's still falling. No.
The Pointer Sisters vibes are off the charts. Dear God. Oh, it was so brutal. I'm like, wow, this is really, really metal in a way that I don't know now. I don't know if we'd be doing dropping Oliver Platt from 45 feet in the air, you know?
I'm for it. keep doing the heavy stuff. Come on. I know. I'm sorry, Aaron.
Richard, clip it. Clip it, please.
keep doing the heavy stuff. Drop them all. That's like what in the Matrix Revolutions was going on there. That didn't work in the Matrix, I'll say that. That did not work for me. This scene hit in the way they wanted it to. The Matrix Revolutions was, anyway. So let's get to the end of the movie. Basically, we have A coin goes through Kevin Bacon's head as Allison. Batman shouldn't kill, but listen, I get it. If you're Magneto, we're not going to weigh in. We're not going to say what we would have done. But I thought that scene was great. And I thought, obviously, like from the beginning of the movie, you're like, oh, wow, that coin is fully going to kill this guy. And it does. And earlier in the movie, he throws it at the drawing of Shaw on the wall, foreshadowing, bam, he's going to put that coin through his head. And he does. I thought that was great. And it was just shot so well with the Professor X feeling the pain and showing it the same way, moving the camera. Matthew Vaughn did a bang up job on that. And I thought it was just a good sequence.
I think to the point we were just making about like how brutal this movie is compared to the other movies today, it's like it's brutal in a way that is inherently satisfying. Like that mm-hmm. moment in particular plays off of so much narrative tension in a way that is so, so earned. And even like some of Matthew Vaughn's other movies have not dealt with narrative tension that well in a moment that's as big and flashy. So, yeah, I think it was just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which
takes us to the showdown on the beach. Moira MacTaggert is like, I don't shoot them with the missiles. So she shoots at Fassbender, and he says, ka-chow, and that bullet goes into Professor X, thus changing his comic origin story for how he ends up in the chair, but putting him in the live-action chair, no less. Eric is like, what have I done to my friend? I love my brother. Maybe I shouldn't kill all the humans right now. Maybe I'll just wait 40 years and do it on the Statue of Liberty. Or, well, I guess he turned them all into mutants, not killed them all.
I think earlier I said the missiles were in Cuba, but I think they were in Turkey. I just wanted to correct
Cuba.
Myself.
Well, that's Cuba.
It was Cuba.
Wasn't there something going on in Turkey, too?
I don't know. Eric was all over the world in this movie.
Yeah.
That man had fast travel unlocked.
This is Game of Thrones season 7 kind of a travel.
He was, one scene he's in Germany, then he's in Argentina, then he's in Cuba. That man was everywhere in this movie. Yeah, he's got that Taylor Swift jet. and well-ironed pants, of course.
Yes.
So that's how it all ends. They have their I thought the divide of them was just so well laid out. This could have been the first movie in a franchise. It could have been a prequel and fleshed out so nicely. And I think the Eric and James differences were just geniusly put on display here. And I was like, man, I want to see what happens next. Oh, I could go watch 3 other movies to see that are already out.
I was not on Tumblr like Jenna was, but I will tell you, this movie made me an Eric and Charles truther for sure. The chemistry they have, like when I watch this movie, to me, they are boyfriends who have a breakup at the end of the movie. I know, I say this about everybody. Classic Jamie wants to see men kiss each other. But like the chemistry these two men have, like in my head, I'm sorry, that final moment on the beach is them breaking up. And that is just, I just have to see it that way. And thank you, Jenna, for agreeing.
Like, to back Jamie up, like, it's one thing to just ship something that isn't necessarily in the canon, but, like, there were epics being written and, like, entire dissertations being written about, like, their relationship and their love story in this movie. Like I said, Tumblr and just the internet writ large really, really glommed onto this movie, I think because that relationship at the center was so strong and had, like, so much to chew on.
BD.
Everyone's
BD.
I just want to see everybody.
Like, no, you're right.
I remember what I was gonna say now.
He never knows how to react to my nonsense.
I'm just, hey man. If maybe one day they'll kiss for you.
Scrambled. Completely scrambled. God bless.
Well, I was changing the lights too, so I got distracted.
Okay.
It's no longer St. Patrick's Day. So then we have it at what we were talking about. That's a Professor
the Eric ending of the movie,
and Eric are in love, and then they're not. Oh, speaking of breakups, that's where I was going to go with that. Speaking of relationships that almost never happened or kind of never happened, but you might have thought it was Beast and Ravens. That subplot didn't really work for me that well. Because like you pointed out earlier, like your whole power is to do that. But then I understood once Eric came in and said, look, you're trying to bench press this weight, whatever. And they used literal physical strength as the example, where if you stop trying to hide yourself, like you're the, if your truest self is your strongest form. I love that message, but the subplot was didn't really work for me until that moment, basically, with Beast and Raven in this one.
I found it cute for what it was. Like, as we were just saying, I think there are stronger relationships in the movie, but like knowing that those two characters just have that bond and like break up by the end of the movie is still like a lot in and of itself.
What I like about it is I think it's really true to like being that age and like, you know, they're flirting and they like each other. But then someone like Eric comes along and you realize you see what it's like to have someone like you for who you are. And like their relationship wasn't going to work because neither of them were comfortable with themselves. And that is a really true thing that young people do. And I like that about it, like, because I'm certainly not shipping it, I'll tell you that. But I think it works really well for what this movie is doing. And I will say, you guys know that Hank is my boy. He's my number one buddy. And I really like Holt in this movie, but I also don't see, I feel like this is not, he's not turning into Kelsey Grammer. He's not growing up to be Kelsey Grammer. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I would have played young Hank a little differently, but I still think he's such a good actor. And him and Jennifer Lawrence were actually dating at the time, so they have real chemistry. So so I do enjoy what's all going down here.
I do think, to your point about Beast, I feel like Kelsey Grammer Beast is so like the quintessential, like Chris Claremont, like iconic version of Beast. Whereas like Nicholas Holt, especially the way that they have the makeup and like the actual Beast form look, is much more the Grant Morrison kind of like more modern cat like sort of iteration. So I feel like that was just another consequence of them kind of sort of rebooting of like, hey, we can have Beast here for more of these movies. And so as a result, let's do something slightly different than Kelsey Grammer.
I mean, yeah. It's not the X-Men unless there's like messy romantic entanglements amongst the team. Like, that's a core part of this entire thing, is that it's just like, wow, when you draw the relationship diagram between the people in this mansion, it is just a web of nonsense.
Yes.
It's a dormitory.
Right. Oh, my God. And it also, Jesus Christ. Go up, MPD. What are you going to say?
What?
What are you going to say?
Well, I said it's a college dormitory.
Uh-huh. Right, exactly. Yeah. Perfect.
But with superpowers.
Yep.
Even worse. Go stream Gen V on.
It's like the athletic dorms.
Which is God. Brandon.
Well, I don't think I only practiced. I wasn't on the team.
Okay. All right.
Fun facts about the movie. McAvoy shaved his head for the role before when he got it, assuming he would have to. Didn't actually have to.
I respect that.
So they ended up putting hair extensions in him for most of the film. But he did go later. He did need to do it. So he was over. He was prepared for down the line. This was originally going to be like a young / Teen Mutants movie at the school with characters we already knew at Storm and others. Didn't happen. And the alternate choice for Shaw, for Matthew Vaughn, Colin Firth.
Oh, God.
He wanted either Firth or Kevin Bacon.
Interesting.
And he ended up getting to work with Firth and Kingsman.
Huh.
Yeah. I was very curious of Jamie's reaction. Yeah.
I'm a left field choice, but I like now I'm like, I could see it.
Imagine him as an evil Nazi. I think he could have done it.
The gears turning.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because Kevin Bacon was so good in the part. Like, he was very good. It's hard to think of someone else doing it, but Colin Firth probably good. Deleted scenes. I watched all of them. A couple of the good ones. Charles was hitting on Moira even more than we saw in the movie. And at one point, she was just like, read my mind. And he was like, I'd rather read your lips. And she was like, well, read my freaking mind, dude. So he does. And he's like, all right, fine, I get it. And he dips out of the room. Eric has a memory. The memory that Eric has when he turns the satellite was a full scene when he arrives in Argentina. They cut it because I think it would have limited the payoff when he remembers it in that sequence with Charles. I called him James earlier because I meant to say Charles, though.
You're not technically wrong. Yeah.
There was a sequence with when Eric and Charles are recruiting Angel. There was a scene where Charles shows his powers by having Angel imagine Michael Fassbender's Eric in a dress, and they've removed that from the film. The scene where Charles hides them from the soldiers. There was a dog that hops up in the truck and sniffs them out and starts barking, but they cut that from the film too. And the soldiers ultimately are like, control that crazy dog, but in Russian. Eric wrecked the soldiers when they got inside there. There was a couple of those that did make the movie, but like just like Beast snapping that neck in X3. There's like one where he uses his powers to drive a knife into someone's gut and twist it. It's pretty brutal and it did not make the cut. Might have bordered on the R rating, I guess. Havoc talks, there's like an extended version of Havoc training. Not too much there, but a bit more that shows his guilt and ultimately does like a little Scott Evil storm off, since we're talking about Austin Powers. There's an extended version of Banshee when he falls out of the window. Instead of cutting right when he hits the bushes, it cuts back to him and he's like in the bush and he's real pissed off that it didn't work. He's like, I'm going to kill you, Charles. Havoc doesn't love the appearance of his chest piece and keeps giving Hank more crap for just calling. They just keep calling Hank names and stuff. And that's all the deleted scenes I made notes about. A couple plot holes. Shout out to New Rockstars for catching a couple of these. I would have never thought of the timelines. Blue M&Ms, they're in the movie. They didn't come out until 1985. The Einstein photo on the shelf was in 1944 in Charles's house. Not taken until 1947. I had Emma Frost in here as one that I wrote down, but that's, we already covered that. And the Langley facility that Charles meets with the CIA wasn't built until 1986. So Eric Voss, thanks for writing those down over on New Rock Stars and delivering those. So that's all my, those are all my notes for the deep dive. We're running a little long here. So anything else we want to say about this before we move on?
We haven't really talked Darwin.
No, we have not.
Oh yeah, oh my God. Well, neither did this movie, right? So Darwin was completely, I'll let you go because I have thoughts on this, but you guys will probably cover it. But yeah, go ahead, Jamie.
Oh, I'll just say, because I know Jenna also has a lot to say. All I'll say about this is when I saw this movie in 2011, I didn't know anything about the character, so it did not bother me. But in retrospect, it is, I did bother me of like, really? You're going to kill that guy? Like, there are other things that are like, okay. But in retrospect, it's like, that was such a weird, dumb choice that everybody hates, and I don't blame everybody for hating it. But Jenna.
I agree. I think it's a very weird decision. It is very much a Matthew Vaughn kind of decision. I think that there was a nugget of it that is interesting of like, how do you kill the person that isn't supposed to die? But I think that the way that it's handled doesn't necessarily do that. This all made me, the second that Edie was confirmed to be cast in Superman, I was like over the moon. Cause I'm like, he gets retribution. He gets to go play a comic character who most likely is not going to die off anytime soon. Cause he definitely deserves to do it. Cause I've heard he's a huge comic fan. Aaron's just shaking.
It's so dumb. It's just so dumb. I just don't. I was like, what? Why? Just what? What for? Why? Especially after we did, we go be in bondage and we panned his face looking like, my people know a little something about that. And then he dies 5 seconds later. Very strong movie. The weakest part of a very, very strong movie.
It was a very out of touch way to just like to go to the old horror trope of like the black guy always dies first. I mean, right after they have the Nazi character look at the black guy and say, you can be slaves. It was like, really? That's a choice here that you guys made. But I think what they wanted to do was show how powerful Shaw is, but it's like there had to be other ways. So yeah, very happy he's getting redemption in Superman. Also, I feel like Superman, that's the franchise you want to be a part of right now. I think everybody's looking at DC like, let me get in there. So good. What a win. What a way to come out on top in the end. Yeah. But yeah, that sucked.
And we can never forget that he is also in one of the greatest franchises of all time, Twilight. Let's not discount his time in Twilight, please.
Well,
he, in a way, he's had some great time to shine.
Yes.
I do want to say too, though, even though that scene ultimately sucks because of how it ends, one of my favorite moments of it though is when Darwin puts his body over all of them to protect them. That like, I love that moment, and it's so nice and like, and it makes you like, and from a movie standpoint, it is like, well, now I'm really sad that he's dead because he's a good man. But from every other standpoint, it's really frustrating because it was a bad choice.
Yeah. Well, all right, we got to take one more quick break. Great opportunity to subscribe to the channel. 953 people watching live right now. Are you guys real? What's happening? Subscribe to the channel on YouTube. No matter where you're watching during this break, go to youtube.com/C/phase0. Hit the subscribe button, smash that like, and we'll see you in a moment for our review score out of 10. See you in a moment. Time to give this movie a score out of 10, and that will come with the official Phase Zero score on our average. We are running out of time here, so we're going to have to move quickly through it. Jenna, what do you got? What are you giving X-Men First Class?
like I said at the start of the show, I think this is my favorite just of the X-Men movies. And I recognize that it still has its flaws, as we just discussed with Darwin. Darwin is a huge reason why this is not a perfect movie for me. So Jamie and I were talking, we were like, we're so glad we have the out of 10 score and the percentages, because it definitely is useful in this case. I would give it like a 9.25. That's what I'm kind of landing on.
9.25. The first person to go two decimals. I respect it. You see that, Jamie?
I will say that I for me on Letterboxd, it's a 5 out of 5 because it just, I love, it's so rewatchable. It makes me happy. It makes my heart happy. But as I told Jenna, this is one case where I am glad that you have your ridiculous not comicbook.com accurate 10 out of 10. Because so for this, I will go 9.9.
Wow. 9. Wow. Very, very good score there. Aaron.
Man, I don't want to bring the averages down, but also,
bring it down.
I can't.
Charlie gave Origins a 3.
I know. Wow. I know, which was wild. You missed that, Jen.
Wow.
All right. I'll be nice. Like 8.9 out of 10. I'm the internet peer pressured me. Justice for Darwin.
You said 8.9?
Yeah.
All right. 8.9. And I, on the 10 scale, we can do two decimals now. I'm giving this one a 9.15 out of 10. I thought it was excellent, but it does have plenty of flaws. The Darwin thing, the subplot that wasn't a huge win for me, and just all this stuff. But overall, way more that works than doesn't. Way more. Some of the best scenes in X-Men movie history, some of the best casting choices, and a couple of misfires. So an imperfect movie, but a very, very good movie. And so that brings it to a phase zero, 9.3 out of 10. That's one of the higher ranked movies we've ever reviewed here. X-Men First Class. You heard it here first. And everybody who's watching live, go ahead, drop your 10 score in the comments as we wrap up the show. Let us know what you thought of X-Men First Class, because phase zero gives it a 9.3 out of 10. Jen, any last words for today's show?
It's at Hey, it's Jenna Lynn on social media. And as always, go read some comics. We were talking before the show about X-Men comics to read. There are so many to dive into if rewatching or watching these movies is inspiring you in any way. So just pick a character that you like, go research their comics. You will find something fun to read.
Jamie Jurak.
Keep an eye out. I went to the Three Body Problem premiere last night, and I had interviewed so many cool people, including Benedict Wong. Mm-hmm. So that article is already up on the site, but everything else is coming soon. I talked to a lot of good Game of Thrones alums, and it was really a fun night.
Benedict Wong. Let's just say we got a lot to talk about on Wednesday, show. Y'all are going to want to be there. Aaron.
It's at Some Like Hornet on Twitter. We got some fun interviews coming out later this week that you guys will enjoy. X-Men fans who have noticed the costume theming today for this episode, you are eating well. And of course, also go, if you love like the early X-Men stuff, Penguin has a collection of all the early X-Men like collected. And it was wild to sit in the bookstore yesterday and page through that. So I was like, oh, if you love the early stuff, like, you know, that's a great thing for people who love the character. And it looks like a coffee table book, so you can rationalize your weird impulse purchase. Good job.
Physical media is furniture.
Yes. It
is. Physical media is a decoration in the house, okay? Mm-hmm. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for joining us for X-Men First Class review on our road to Deadpool and Wolverine. We're doing this every Monday. We're looking at all the X-Men movies years later. Next up is The Wolverine. We'll be doing that on Monday. On Wednesday, we have our regularly scheduled Phase Zero show. We have 1,000 people watching live right now, so we can't thank you enough for hanging out with us and doing this review with us. Make sure you subscribe to the channel, because we have exclusive interviews about X-Men 97, which we will be talking about every Wednesday, starting this Wednesday throughout all of season one. Exclusive interviews, all kinds of stuff. So we really appreciate y'all. Play our show for your mom. Play it for your dog. Leave a 5-star review. Help us continue growing. 25 million views was hopefully still just the beginning for Phase Zero, and that's just YouTube. So we love you guys. Thank you for watching X-Men First Class with us. See you on Wednesday.